How does Torah view money? This is Rabbi Yitzchok Price with another episode of Tachlis Talks, growth-oriented, parsha-related Torah podcasts. We are up to the Torah portion of Vayakhel, but I'm not going to be looking at the actual portion, but the closing reading that we'll do this Shabbos, the Maftir, the last Aliyah, will bring us back to the beginning of last week's parsha, to the beginning of Kisisa, where we read about the collection of the half-shekel coins. This Shabbos is referred to as the Shabbos of Shkalim, the Shabbos of the special reading of that portion that deals with the collection of the coins, because this time of year, as we're about to usher in the month of Adar, Adar was the month, that last month of the Jewish calendar, where we would have the national collection of the coins, of the half-shekel coins, so that we had the wherewithal to make the purchases necessary in the Beis HaMikdash, in the temple, for the upcoming Jewish year that technically starts with the month of Nisan, just over a month from now, the month of Pesach, the month of our Exodus of Egypt, the month of our becoming the Am Yisrael, the nation of Israel, headed to Sinai to get the Torah. That's the foundational opening month of the year, Nisan. We would have to have the funds already in hand to be bringing the communal offerings in Nisan, and hence the shekels, the half shekels, were collected in Adar. We read about the half shekel collection at the end of this Shabbos' reading to be in that frame of mind and to reflect on that collection. With this in mind, of the half shekel coin, I'd like to share some perspective on the Torah's perspective on money. Fascinatingly, through this collection, the individual shifted from being merely one of many to being part of a set. The individual now became part of the tzibur, part of the community, part of Am Yisrael. The half shekel, that sense of incompletion without the other half shekel, and the inability for anybody to give more or less, as difficult as it might be for the poor person to come up with the money, and as difficult as it might be for the wealthy person to be participating in such a humble manner, everybody is relatively equalized and all part of the same outcome of this tzibur of Klal Yisrael. The tzibur, the community, has a fascinating distinction from the individual in that the community does not die. Am Yisrael, Klal Yisrael, Am Yisrael Chai. The individual cells may come and go, but the organism lives on. And, intriguingly, as some of the commentaries point out, that through this collection, the individual who can only be in, so to speak, a religious mode or super devoted mode for X percentage of the day, and even if we are living in a very, very spiritually focused life that every moment is utilized for the good, but at some points we need to detach, to sleep, to be involved in other elements which are not the supercharged aspects of our spirituality. And again, they all contribute to it. But with the collection, we all ended up in that supercharged mode constantly because the collection went toward the offerings and the various elements of the temple that have a status of tamid, ongoing, continuous, constantly within God's focus as to the fact that we are doing an act of spiritual excellence. For example, with that money that was collected, we would bring the daily tamid offering, the one sheep brought in the morning and one sheep brought in the evening every single day of every single week of every single month of every single year in the temple. We also, with that money, purchased the breads, the flour and the materials for the showbread, the lechem hapanim, that was on the table all week long and only removed when the next set went on the table, which were then there on the table all week long and only removed when the next set were put on. By the way, remaining warm and fresh the entire time without an electric warmer. That was another sense of tamid, constantly there, displaying our dedication to God. And the money also went to the purchase of the oil for the menorah of the temple, which was lit every single evening of every single week of every single month of every single year, and which had one candle that remained miraculously burning beyond the morning when the other candles would go out and remained burning until the next night when you use that flame to ignite the menorah and continue the process to the next night and continue the process, that sense of tamid. And even later on, when that miracle no longer happened, you still had this reality that this was a mitzvah that had was unbroken mitzvah, that there was no day without the lighting of the menorah. That's a function of what happens when the individual participates as part of the community and transforms to this now being an element that is called community. And it's no longer me as an individual doing the max that I can, but me being far more significant, far more powerful as part of that tzibur, part of Am Yisrael. A little money buys great spiritual potency and vibrancy and eternity. But another level of understanding, and this called mostly from the beautiful new biography of Rav Moshe Shapira of blessed memory, done by his student, Rabbi Menachem Nissel. Rabbi Nissel pulls together some beautiful insights of Rabbi Shapira as he's describing his life and his Torah perspective and his Torah legacy. And he shares a perspective on money that I will paraphrase from this beautiful work. And he describes that technically, a world could exist without money. You can have an economy in which everything is simply barter. I've got some chickens and I have eggs, but I don't have milk. I trade my eggs for your milk. You have the cows and you have milk, but you don't have any wool. So you trade some milk with your other neighbor who has sheep to get some wool. And we could keep exchanging goods and materials and services, and we could end up with everything that we need. But it gets rather inconvenient. It's much easier to carry a few dollars than to carry several goats and sheep. And money facilitates governments taxing their citizens. Money adds the quality of life, but it would seem that it's not an essential ingredient for our functioning and existing. As such, we find that for the most part, Torah does not demand that there be something called money. Even mitzvahs that require that there be a purchase made, an acquisition, those mitzvahs can be done with a transfer of something of value. Redemption of the firstborn, Pidyon HaBen, we typically use 5 of the silver dollars, after back to the 1960s silver dollars when they were really silver, but we use money, but it does not have to be money. We could use that weight of silver, and technically we could even use other things that are recognized as having the value of that weight of silver. Marriage, which is the example where the Torah describes an element of acquisition, and we learn back to Abraham's acquisition of the Maras Machpelah. Hopefully we'll get back to that as well, but Abraham's acquisition was with money, and hence the marriage acquisition is with money, but we don't hand over cash under the chuppah. Neither your photographer or your mother-in-law will be happy if that's what they see in lieu of a ring. We use a ring, okay? That's certainly not how it was done initially in the time of the giving of the Torah and in early, early Jewish history, but it definitely works, 100% kosher, perfectly valid, because we're giving an object that has recognized value, or I should say, where the fact that it has value is recognized. So generally, we get away without using money, except when it comes to the half shekel. A half shekel coin had to be a half shekel coin. You couldn't do this mitzvah with a cookie or something else that happened to match the half shekel value. You had to give a half shekel coin. Apparently, the Torah has in mind that there is something to money. It's not just a matter of convenience. Rav Moshe Shapira explains, as recorded here by Rav Menachem Nissel, that money measures value. And without money, there's really no such thing as set cost. There's no price tag. How much is this worth to you? How many sheep do you need? How many goats do you have? How much milk do you have? How many eggs do you have? What kind of exchanges are we going to make? But there's no set value. Money creates a system of value where you start to rank things in terms of their cost and value. The Hebrew term for erech, of value, is erech. The corollary is kavod, where we measure things, we give them rank and their position of esteem. By the other word for expensive versus cheap, yakar and zol, yakar and zol, yakar is a word for honor. In the Megillah, when it talks about giving honor to their husbands. The women should give yakar levalehen. It says over there, the word for honor, again, is yakar, the same word that we use for expense. Some elements in life are really a function of this issue of kavod, this issue of honor. And we know that when it comes to matters of royalty, royalty is measured in kavod, where the currency that determine what rank king this is what level of kavod, what type of honor does he get, what's the esteem, what type of pomp and glory. And we bestow the ultimate kavod to the King of Kings, of course, Hashem. He is the true source of what really matters and what really has value. And we make many references to this idea of kavod, Baruch Hashem, kavod malchuso le'olam va'ed. And Hashem should be exalted, your kavod should be manifest over the world. When Hashem created that there is going to be a reality of money, not just that human beings ended up having money as a matter of convenience, but Hashem dictated that there must be money because he dictated that Moshe had to mint coins to create this machatzis hashekel. He was teaching that the world depends, the infrastructure of the world depends on something more profound than just things working out and what it takes for your survival. The world is dependent on a system of valuing, of giving kavod, giving relative stature and rank. Our challenge then is to determine what really rates and what really ranks. Fascinatingly, when Moshe was told to create this system of machatzis hashekel, that we're going to use coins to create atonement, we're going to use coins to create spiritual reality, he was rather surprised. And the terminology of the Medrash could sound like Moshe just wasn't sure what's the coin, what does it look like, how much silver it should be, but many understand there was something more sophisticated happening over here. His question was something more profound. How can it be that something as mundane as money plays such a lofty role? And Hashem showed him a fiery coin taken out from under his throne of glory, his Kisei HaKavod, to respond to his question. Now again, if you take the question as a simple question of what size, Hashem was showing him the size. Clearly, something much deeper here. If he's specifically showing him a fiery coin that is pulled out from under his throne of glory, not where God has to keep his spare change. Fire. In Shir HaShirim, we describe our relationship with Hashem, our love of Hashem, like Reshafa Rishbe Esh, like flashes of fire. Flashes of fire that can't be extinguished by tons of water will not eliminate this fiery love we have for Hashem, indicating the power of our love for Hashem. The love of Hashem that's like that fire can't just be washed away. And if you offer anything in exchange for that love of Hashem, we're not ready to abandon that love. In the parallel, imagine someone's offering you cash in lieu of your ability to love your spouse, parent, child, sibling, loved one of some type, and they're offering you $10 or $10,000 or $10 million, you would laugh them off. This love has no value. It is beyond anything that can be bought or in any way challenged that will offset the relationship with a certain amount of money. And that is how our relationship with Hashem certainly is hopefully the case. The coin of fire Hashem is showing him, Hashem is showing Moshe that there's an ultimate single value that outshines all other value. Everything else is worthless relative to this value. And that value that comes from under Hashem's throne, under his Kisei HaKavod, Hashem is showing Moshe, and ultimately having Moshe teach us, that what's essentially valuable in this world, the true kavod, is that which is tied back to Hashem's throne. Every other measurement of kavod, how much money this person makes, how well they can throw a basketball, what crowd they can draw to their stage as they perform, every other measure of kavod is petty, negligible, relative to this kavod of connectivity with Hashem's throne. When we give that half shekel coin, which we'll read about this Shabbos, and many communities will put out the half shekel coins, we're not giving them to the temple this year, but to be given to the poor, and right before Purim, many communities will have those half shekel coins available, or half dollar coins here in America that we buy out and put in our cash to be, or sorry, we put in our cash to buy out those half shekel equivalent coins and then give them to be reconnecting with that mitzvah of the half shekel. When we do that, we're making a statement about value. What is valuable? Our half shekel, small amount of money that's intimately connected to another half shekel made of fire that is kept up there in heaven under God's holy throne. And our half shekel, to quote over here, our half shekel thus becomes the paragon of currency, find the completion in the only currency that has true worth. Now, fascinatingly, we mentioned before marriage, that marriage, we learned that marriage has to be, the groom gives something of value to the bride, and the Torah is really describing the groom giving silver, currency, money to the bride, but we definitely do that mitzvah even with other elements. But the very fact that we learn this connection, fascinatingly, is tied to the purpose of that initial purchase. When Avraham was making the first recorded real estate deal in the Torah, might be the first recorded real estate deal in world history, but it stands out as the paradigm of all real estate purchases since it is the first in the Torah, and he's buying the cave that's called Ma'ara Samach Pela, the cave of the doubles, or the double cave. Now, it's the cave of the doubles because of the couples that are buried there, Adam and Eve, Abraham and Sarah, Yitzchak and Rivka, Isaac and Rebekah, and later on Yaakov and Leah. But Rashi describes that the same term, Ma'ar Samach Pela, describes as a double cave. It had two floors, an upstairs and a downstairs. Why should we care about that? What's the message in having an upstairs and a downstairs? Ah, says Rabbi Shapira. Upstairs and downstairs represents heaven and earth. The cave is representing heaven and earth in Chevron, the city of Chibur, of attachment, where heaven and earth meet, where Abraham is teaching the world a message about body and soul, that Sarah's body will be here as her soul reconnects back in heaven, and that she lives on. It's not that she is all over, then there's no concept of further respect to her. She lives on because all of life is a connection of heaven and earth, of body and soul. And this purchase represents that. This purchase, Abraham's first use of money to make a purchase that's recorded, certainly of a real estate purchase, is teaching the world about the bridge between heaven and earth, the bond of heaven and earth, and how money is a tool that can teach us that the only time we talk about money in the Torah, that it has to be cash, is that machzis ha-shekel, that half-shekel coin, which is being used as the atonement and the connection to the ongoing service of the temple and to have us become part of the community in a spiritual mode of constantly being God's focus, which means that the money message, back to that fiery coin, is that reminder to the fact that what really matters in life is that connectivity to the divine, and what really matters in life, Avraham is teaching the world, is that connectivity to the divine. And that's what we learn when we bury Sarah and we realize that she's not done because her divinely connected eternal self lives on. And certainly the goal, as whenever we deal with the concept of funeral and death and we're reminded how fleeting the body part of our reality is compared to the potentially infinite neshama, and our job to nurture that infinite neshama, it's part of the message Avraham is teaching at that purchase of Ma'ar Samach Pela in Chevron for that first recorded burial of the Torah. This idea of the potency of what we accomplish with that giving a half shekel coin, of the reminder of what any transaction can trigger in our mind, this reality that we're using money, and the money can be buying things that we consider important, but what really, really, really rates. And we can have an expense, a purchase, where there's a lot of money moved, and at the end of the day, very little to show for it in an absolute sense. And we can be moving a little bit of money and buying our eternity.
So with this goal in mind, and with idea in mind, as we are reading the portion this week of Shkalim and noting on the calendar, it may call it the Shabbos of Shkalim, and simply listening to this podcast and thinking the idea of Shkalim, let's remember that what really matters, that connectivity to that divine throne above. And we have the capacity to be connected to that divine throne above. We have the capacity to make ourselves more neshama dominant, more soul dominant, where our body, we don't dismiss the body, but the body is there as a tool for the neshama to do what it needs to do, and let that help us determine how we value things, what really ranks, what really rates, where do we spend that money, how do we use that money to accomplish great spiritual things, and in that process, become the type of people who are far more likely to achieve our tachlis.